first presentation here.
AI presentation.
And then we'll have a panel and we'll all have an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. So as you're watching the presentation, if you have questions, write them down. We'll have two folks on the floor with a mic running around so we can get your questions answered. But our first presenter is Quan Tron. He is a co-founder and CEO of UrbanForm, a parcel-level zoning intelligent platform that digitizes municipal zoning codes so planning staff, developers, and architects can get instant, reliable development feasibility answers. UrbanForm is actively deployed across 19 different Oregon municipalities where it helps communities deliver consistent self-service response to zoning inquiries, navigate increasingly complex and layered land use regulations, and reduce the friction that slows investment in housing production. Quan is a licensed architect, published author, and adjunct professor at Portland State University. He studied art and engineering at Dartmouth College and holds a master in architecture from Yale. Where's Brian? Oh, there you are. Come on up. Welcome. Thank you, Tim. I'm going to start my presentation. Be here today. Kevin, you. Okay.
I've seen this one.
Should ask for
it. Oh, there we are. Okay. Well, I want to say I'm really happy to be here with you guys. I haven't been to Pendleton since I was a kid. I actually grew up in Beaverton. So my fourth grade teacher came from Pendleton, so I learned all about the Roundup in fourth grade. It's just really great to be back. I mean, I think Oregon has every single natural advantage in the world. So you guys know I grew up here in Oregon. I now am based in Portland. I have a company called UrbanForm, and I'm really happy to be invited here by the League of Cities. It's the second year that we've been presenting, and I just want to say that, you know, we love working with cities. Cities are our project. It's our communities. It's where our people get together. It is, you know, I'm going to be a little off the cuff here. It's God's project. It is, I think, what we are all working together. It's kind of flourished here. So we are, like Tim said, we're actually now working with 20 different jurisdictions throughout Oregon. These are some of them here, as well as we've included some that we're actively involved in discussing bringing UrbanForm to their jurisdictions as well. So Jessica was sitting at my table from North Bend. North Bend is a customer of UrbanForm, and we just really love what's going on down in the South Coast there. But we, you know, we love working with the cities, and I'll tell you why. So, Tim had kind of mentioned, you know, I'm an architect by training. So we had, you know, initially developed UrbanForm to basically help private development understand how to navigate regulations and zoning and how to figure out what's feasible on an area. We've started working with cities now, and that means that we see ourselves as kind of building this bridge. And every single building and every single development is essentially a private-public partnership, right? The developers and the architects and the builders can only do what's allowed in the regulation. And the cities have the authority of compliance. So everything that happens is really this partnership. So us being a company, we see ourselves in the middle helping bridge this gap. And I travel, and this is a photograph that I took when I was traveling down to the South Coast. This is, you know, part of what we see when you travel around Oregon, and it's so beautiful. And we see ourselves as that bridge, kind of putting people together, putting people together to make the flourishing of our cities happen. So UrbanForm is a better way to see zoning. I'm just going to let you know, I have about 15 slides. I'll try to get through this really quickly so that we can get to what I think is the juicier part, which is the Q&A around AI. But for those of you who don't do much around land use or zoning, I feel like this is kind of a great image. This is how I felt as an architect. At the very beginning of the stage, everybody has an opinion on zoning and what's allowed. The architect we had to do the research, that once I did the research, I was presenting it to my client, a developer, an owner. They were often doing their own research. We had consultants like civil engineers or land use attorneys. Everybody was doing it on their own. And of course, they passed the city at the end, and everybody's fighting over zoning. Now, when you sit down and you try and do the zoning, this is what it looks like. This is a photograph that I took as an architect sitting down at the Portland Building Development Services, right? So you do this research, you spend all your time, you're combing through PDFs, you're going through your binders. At that time, in an office, architecture office, you had to put the binders there. And then you do all this research, and then you go to the city, and then you watch them do exactly the same thing over and over again. And you repeat this process, however long it takes, or however long it's willing, to get to the same answer. And the complexity can be mind-boggling. For those of you who don't know, for just to take an example, Portland, which I know is, you know, perhaps a more complicated zoning code, it's 2,000 pages. It's 2,000 pages, there's 1,000 different zoning designations across three counties comprised of the metro area. So this is just a complexity that is, I would say, it's a barrier, right? And I've got two Ivy League degrees, and believe me, I don't feel like, you know, I look at the zoning code and I basically want to smash my face against the keyboard. Because I would spend 15 minutes reading it, and it says, well, if there's an exception on this one, then you go to this section, I would go to that section, I would read that section, and I was just like, how did I get here? What am I doing? I don't know. So, you know, 5 years ago I left professional practice to do that, to just kind of make that process for architects initially, because that's what I knew, to get that process to be a little bit better, so that I, you know, leaving like digital bookmarks, so to speak, so I wouldn't forget why I figured out that the height of 45 feet, that the unit density minimum is, you know, 2 units for every 5,000 square feet. So I was just trying to like leave digital bookmarks, so to speak, and I was also, at that time, training my junior staff. Like, so my architects that was in the firm, I was trying to get them, you know, leveled up on how to do this on behalf of their careers, on behalf of their clients, projects, firms. So I was starting to do that. So I was basically trying to take the process from everybody doing it on their own, you know, alone and pointing fingers, to a place where we had one shared place where we could understand what the rules really were that governed the building. And it basically involved something much more complicated than I realized. You know, I grew up, my parents were both computer programmers, by the way, in Beaverton. So I had familiarity with computers, but the complexity of doing this was even greater than I had kind of been, you know, otherwise I would have done it. Maybe if I knew how complicated it was, I probably would have just kept my salary. But, you know, we're taking the digital maps, we're taking the development code, we're taking all these different file formats, and we're trying to create just one place where everybody can understand what the rules are. And the digital platform for these serve that really well, right? Because I think if you think of the alternatives are often those paper-based processes that are a little bit more, you know, I think require a little bit more management. So that's what Urban Form does. You know, we basically take all these different data sources and you know, media files, and we put them in one place so that everybody can understand the zoning regulations, the building regulations, the land use that governs our cities and our communities. Now, the ostensible reason that we're here is to talk about AI. So I do want to talk about that, because that is my job. I'm tasked with using technologies to help people make their job better. And I have this analogy that I've been thinking about for a while, that AI is a little bit like if you dropped an engine into 18th century America. And if you dropped this engine into 18th century America, I think you could recognize quite clearly that this is an advanced piece of technology, right? It's, you know, if you could spool it up, you could see it runs and it does amazing things. But without the infrastructure around it, without the chassis builders, without the tires, without the roads, without, you know, an understanding of what goes in and what goes out, then that engine actually can't do that much for you. And I think AI is a little bit like that. it's this amazing engine, and it really is fantastic. What everybody is building right now is kind of like those rails that give it the correct input and give it the correct output, so that the correct output can come out of it. There's this other analogy that I think of too, and this is, you know, this is a Leatherman tool, and I don't know if you guys know the Leatherman company, but they're based in Portland. I used to play tennis with the son, Lee Leatherman. He went to high school with me. And I love these tools. Like, you look at them, and you know that millions of dollars of research went in. They're glorious. Look at them. They can do everything, right? But I also know that if you're an electrician, if you're a good electrician, these are the tools you need, right? And a Leatherman isn't going to really help you as an electrician. It might help you on the fringe cases, but, you know, all the development around what you need to do as an electrician in your job actually becomes quite specialized, right? You need these special tools to do it. And the Leatherman, while it's this fantastic piece of technology, isn't going to help you there. Same thing if you're a rough framer, right? If you're doing rough carpentry and you're framing a house, the Leatherman, like, you might have in your back pocket, but these tools are actually better suited for you. All the development should be in kind of making these tools better. I think AI is a little bit like that too. It's this wonderful general purpose tool at the moment, but, you know, for those of you who are in jobs in your cities, you know that the specific things that you need to do are not yet what AI has kind of built for you, right? You're not sure what's going into it, you're not sure what's going to come out of it, and that's, you know, of limited use for you now. And that's the way I see AI too. And for us at Urban Forum, like, we feel like that is our job. So we take this process and we understand, you know, I'm not going to say we understand it super well, because every day on the job, every day working with a different city, I learn new things, I'll be honest with you. We're working with Coos County right now, and yesterday we just learned that the zoning map that they have published is not the zoning map they're looking for when you apply for a building. And that is something that we just have to deal with. We're happy to do that, though, because when we do it, we can make it available in a way that they hadn't been able to yet so far. So what we do is we take all this information, and for us, you know, we try and understand what folks need out of it. We try and understand what goes into it, and so that we make sure that people on both ends are getting what they need. And at each point of the process, which is a complicated process that we go through, we make this determination that is AI going to help us here, or is there another tool? Like, for instance, like, you should know that if you ask AI to do a math problem, it may or may not get it right for you. But if you ask a calculator, it will always get it right for you. So there's certain tools that are right for the job, and AI, which is this amazing tool, may not be the right tool at a specific process. But I see that as our job. It's our job to kind of understand what you need to come in and what you need to see out, and then we'll manage it to try and make it the most efficient tool. Now, this is how it works. So I have a little video that I'm going to show. So this is our web platform for Yamhill County. So we have, if any of you know about zoning, if you can see that this map has all 11 different jurisdictions within Yamhill, so that's the 10 incorporated cities and the unincorporated county itself. It's got one online map where you can view all these different maps. You can view all the different zoning development codes for all those 11 different jurisdictions without caring about where the city lines are or where the UGBs are. Because if you click on any single parcel, you will get that lot's information. You will get all the identifiers, you'll get all the height limits, setbacks, lot coverage requirements, unit densities, FARs if they apply. You will get allowable uses, you will get all that information, regardless of jurisdiction boundaries. Each single piece of information will be tied to the specific spot in the zoning code where the authoritative source lies. And that is something that is, you know, to the communities that we work with, has been what they call a godsend. It is something that is, you know, up there. Community service goals, their community development goals, their housing production goals. It is something that we've been extremely proud to provide. And it's as simple as using Google Maps, right? And I think it's one of those things where, if you know how to use Google Maps, you know. So these are some of the benefits. You know, I'm not gonna read these bullet points to you. You can come to me after, but I do have some quotes. You know, there's a planner in North Bend, Jessica, your city there. She says she uses it every day. And this is a joy to me, to be able to understand that there is a city planner who uses this every single day. It's her go-to resource. She says it's one of the tabs that she always... you know, another planner in Newburgh, Leanne, actually says that previously she would get calls every single day from brokers or landowners trying to understand what they could do. And she would have to, you know, depending on how serious they were, she could spend up to half a day gathering together the information. But Urban Form takes care of that for her. And then this is probably my favorite quote. You know, this is a building official on Boardman, Glenn. And he, you know, he says it's a joy to use. Now, for those of you who know building officials, can you just imagine the joy that I felt when a building official said it was a joy to use, right? Like, can you imagine a building official going around talking about joy? So this, to me, was like one of my favorite quotes, right? So having this, and to me, that kind of makes my day, because I think the work that we do for our communities in cities, the work that we do to try and create the basic flourishing of each other and our communities, that's really the work, you know, that we are, I think that animates us, that motivates us. To make that a joy, to make it so that we're all aligned around the shared things that we think we want for each other, our future generations, our communities, that's the real work that I think God put us here for. That's what I want to support. So that's our mission. It's for better buildings, it's for better cities, it's for our communities and our environment. So that's why I'm here, and I'm really happy to be invited. I really I love working with cities about Oregon, and I'd love to continue the conversation. There's going to be a Q&A. We'll get to that in a second. But yes, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Juan. You know, tools like this are really exciting for me, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I think about this. How many in here are kind of frustrated with some of the preemption coming out of Salem when it comes to design standards? And all, we all are. You know, and you, I think at the core of that is, if I'm a builder coming into the city, I want certainty that I'm going to get through this process and I'm going to have a successful project. On the city side, we want certainty that we're going to have a development occur in a way that's compatible with our community and meets our vision and our comp plan and all that. And tools like this, I think, are really helpful in creating that certainty and kind of bridging that gap for folks. How many people deal with incomplete applications, for instance? Yes. So anyway, so these kind of things get me really excited. So our second speaker, we're going to bring Brian Garcia back up here. My notes here. Not my notes. So Brian brings 20 years of experience building relationships in state and local government. Brian Garcia has helped hundreds of agencies address a wide range of challenges by empowering their people with cutting-edge technology. He currently serves as a workforce capability partner at CompTIA, where he focuses on people-centric workforce development programs and initiatives that build digital fluency, develop in-demand AI skills, and promote industry-recognized IT certifications, helping organizations create a future-ready workforce. CompTIA was recently awarded a publicly solicited contract with League of Oregon Cities, enabling any town or city in the state of Oregon to access CompTIA. Products and special pricing through NPP.gov, which has a partnership with the League of Oregon City. So, Brian, welcome.
Unlocking AI for cities.
Let's see. There we go. Much better. Well, thank you, Quam, for a great presentation. I think it's safe to say that Quam might be the brightest guy in the room. What a resume, yeah. But, you know, I think what Quam showed us is just a great example of how AI is improving processes within the city government, and in this case, in the planning department, and really turning complex zoning codes into instant parcel-level answers. And that's real time and cost savings when you put a ROK use case to it. It reminds me when I worked for about 10 years with the county assessors across the U.S., capturing aerial imagery and extracting data from those images using machine learning in order to reinvent the way that property assessors assess homes. And so it's just a very powerful use case on how this AI technology can be used. So again, thank you, Quan, for demonstrating your application and how you're helping those cities. But what I think what its application does show is that AI doesn't create value on its own. He talked about many different data sources that he was pulling from, but I want to note that he did say it's our job, right? And we got to talk about the people and why that's so important and why that's a critical component to this AI technology. The cities that are seeing real results aren't just buying tools, they're investing in their people and in AI skills. So before we talk about city processes and automations and efficiencies, I want to frame today around practical use and AI readiness. How individuals can become more productive, how teams can scale and impact, and how cities can really unlock real value using AI. And because I think the power of AI doesn't start with technology, it actually starts with the people here in this room. And so I'm gonna put up a question on the board. I've had this kind of running at my booth. And it's a question I think all of us should be asking ourselves here in the room, especially as city officials and council members and mayors here. Is your city's workforce ready for AI? Are we just aware of it? And this might be one that's even a little bit more thought-provoking, is what happens to your workers without AI? What happens to your workers without AI and digital fluency in the next 2 to 3 years? So what happens if we don't skill your workers that are right now working for you? What does that look like? Well, before I go any further and get a little bit more into the meat of AI and why I'm here, I did want to talk to you a little bit about who CompTIA is. CompTIA was founded in the late 1980s by a technology industry to provide vendor-neutral IT training and certifications. And since then, we've issued more than 3.6 million certifications worldwide. So we're a global recognized company in regards to IT certifications and skills. And so what matters most for us today is our focus on AI and cybersecurity skills that supports the transformation into an AI world. We don't build tools, we don't build applications. Our role is helping organizations and governments just like you. We help you become AI fluent by building staff confidence and certifying those skills. So, why does this matter? Well, AI is everywhere. I can't tell you, I'm on the road quite a bit and I go to these events and it's amazing how each one of these booths now are marketing some sort of AI component within their application. And just to give you an idea as far as the popularity on what AI looks like over the years, I'll kind of describe it, it's a little faint there, but it starts in back in 2024. And as you can see, this is a graph of a Google search on AI, and you can see how it steadily has progressed over the years. And you can see in 2026, you can see a large peak on the popularity just from searches within the Google search. And is there any Taylor Swift fans in the audience?
Nope.
Yeah? All right, well, sorry Swifties, but AI has completely taken over the popularity in regards to Google. Well, we'll see. There was one time where I see that Taylor did outperform AI, and that must have been right around that Aries tour, I believe. Or maybe the engagement to Kelsey, that's right. Oh. Yeah, but I gotta tell you, AI is everywhere. As I was traveling out here and I sat down in my seat, to start enjoying my plane ride. I sat down next to me to an elderly couple, and they asked me what I did. And I said, I was coming out here to do a presentation and talk about AI. And the wife, she got a big smile on her face, and she said, oh yeah, I use AI right now. She just started telling me how she was using it. And this lady was likely in her 70s, and it was just amazing to see that us as humans are just hungry for this knowledge and to learn. And as I looked over, I saw another gentleman with his laptop open. He actually had a chatbot, and he was asking it questions, and it was giving back answers as we were flying on the plane using the Wi-Fi. So it's just everywhere, and it's starting to get embedded in every tool. So it's AI is not something cities are deciding whether to adopt someday. It's already in motion, and it's already embedded in some of the tools that some of us are using every day, such as email, document editing, searching, and scheduling. What's happening is many cities, it's uneven adoption. Some staff are experimenting, like I've had conversations in the past that you do have an advisory board and you start to do research. But others are unsure and hesitant, and they're standing still.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, the real gap isn't technology. The AI is evolving fast and it's learning. It's actually the knowledge, it's the guidance and confidence of us humans. So municipalities that invest and build AI fluency today will dramatically be better positioned to leverage this transformative technology. I like to say that AI is a capacity multiplier for cities, enabling faster services and more efficient use of limited resources. So a big piece of our business, we actually do a lot of research and surveys within the industry. So we come out with job reports monthly in the tech industry, and we produce annual reports. And this particular report came out here in February, and it was in regards to AI in the workforce. And right now, what our data is telling us is that AI is the number one skill that's in demand for HR hiring departments, and that goes for enterprise and government. They're looking for these skills in order to start operating these tools and applications going forward. So what we see is AI skills are impacting all job roles and all job families. It's not a job that's created, you're now an AI tech. It's just touching all of the jobs. So I think it's important here for the people in the room to realize this is for the entire workforce and for the folks that you work on a day-to-day basis. So municipalities that invest are the ones that are really going to see the force multiplier when it comes to utilizing this technology. So I'm going to put this up on the screen and just give you time to get through it. And this is what all of our data is pointing to, is AI is not just a new skill for technical workers. It's no longer for just your IT department and the folks that know computers. It's a new technical skill for all workers. This goes for folks that are in trades, welding, air conditioners, mechanics. They're still using digital applications to input this data. And so they're going to need to be able to have the skills in order to prompt these applications correctly in order to get the right answers back. I think small cities have an advantage when it comes to deploying and implementing AI. Very well positioned, and it can benefit. When teams are small and people wear multiple hats, even small time savings matter when it comes to cities. With the right skills and fluency, a two-person department can perform like a five-person team. And because there's less bureaucracy, learning typically happens a lot faster in these smaller jurisdictions, and AI is being implemented a bit quicker. And I think Quang did a great job of highlighting AI helps relieve repetitive tasks. Processes that help over and over again, the administrator overload. So supporting stretched small staff, AI, I think, is the correct tool to implement once you're properly skilled to know what the risks are when it comes to using AI tools. Another thing I wanted to address in this presentation, and this can tell you how many times I do hear this question when it comes to addressing the fear, is AI going to replace our jobs? What's going to happen? Maybe one day, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball what that looks like in 10, 20 years, but not today. The reality is AI is changing tasks far more often than it's replacing jobs. It takes those repetitive work tasks, such as drafting summaries, organizing information, so people can focus on judgment, relationships, and local context. The simplest way to say it is AI removes friction, not people. And what our data is telling us is a different story when it comes to eliminating jobs. We just recently came out with our annual report, and one of the studies shows that only 9% of companies reported replacing staff with AI without offsetting actions like reskilling or adding new roles into their organization. So AI changes work far more than it eliminates work at this point. And what I think is actually happening in the workforce is staff are moving to higher impact work, requiring critical thinking skills, the judgment, empathy, and local knowledge, and that's what's important. Employees who learn to work with AI, they become more valuable for your organization, not less. So when staff know how to use AI responsibly and effectively, they become a value and asset to your organization. So investing in AI fluency is the single best job security strategy I think you can put in place for your employees, for your team, and for your entire city. So let's talk about a little bit about the AI maturity curve. And I think this might be one of the most important slides, because when folks say AI, where do we start? What does this look like? And I think AI literacy and fluency, it must be foundational for everybody. Just like years ago when Microsoft Office came out with Word and Excel, we weren't automatically data analysis and pros at that and able to write books because we had access to Word. We had to learn those skills, learn how to use those tools. And that's the same thing that's taking place right now. Skilling is not a one-time event when it comes to this. It's an ongoing process aligned with your AI strategy within your city. Government teams gain confidence and reduce risk by learning AI security and compliance and responsible use. So we like to say AI maturity isn't a jump, it's a progression over time. And so in having conversations there at the booth and traveling around the U.S., some cities that I see are already at stage one or level one, where individuals are using AI to draft emails, to summarize documents, and I think folks are starting to see the real power and benefits of what this technology can bring. Level two is when those same uses show up consistently across a department, and I think Kwong's presentation demonstrated that perfectly, is there was something that continued to come up in that planning process where AI was able to solve those challenges and create some really good time savings when it comes to what was going on in that application. And then level three is when cities see an organization the wide benefits and services that can be offered to the communities, and benefits like continuity, consistency, better reporting, and predictive analysis. So the technology doesn't change, the intent and confidence do. 85% of companies today now consider recognized AI skills and certifications important to validate employee skills. 85% of companies nowadays hiring. So what does it look like as far as individual use? Level one, I believe, is where cities should be starting, and where many of you guys are already at. These uses are low risk, and stay full under human control, which is super important. AI gives staff a first draft or a summary, and the staff decides what's final. And that's exactly what I was hearing in my conversations yesterday, is it's a great starting point. And I think that's the way that we need to look at this technology, but with us having complete control on what's actually going out the door. So when you look at individual productivity, you're looking at a baseline of Gen AI basics, empowering employees to be curious, to be innovative. I can't tell you the ideas, once you empower your staff and provide them the correct skills, the ideas that are going to be, the ideas and the solutions that will be coming out of your staff. I'm excited to hear what's to come about. So when you talk about the four critical skills in the AI world, number one, we're talking about AI fluency. And what is that? The ability to use AI tools and systems effectively, efficiently, and responsibly. And then the other three are just human related. It's going to take us to be curious, to desire to learn. We got to get excited to learn again and improve and solve problems. Critical thinking is another very important skill when it comes to the AI world. An ability to evaluate information, identify assumptions, and make well-informed and reasoned decisions. And last but not least, in the human aspect, is communication. The ability to efficiently express your ideas and accurately understand the ideas of others when it comes to the four critical pieces in this AI world. And then we go to level two, is where cities start to feel the real return, right? You get these individual inputs from your employees that are skilled, that have been using these tools at a low risk. And now they're talking about, how can we improve processes in our department? And this is applying AI to repeatable work, just like Kwong said, not decisions. For example, checking permitting applications for missing pieces, organizing incoming requests in public works, or drafting consistent responses. Staff are still reviewing everything, but they spend less time redoing work, and that's the important piece of AI. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, what we can do from a department standpoint, but it's really about automating and augmenting team functions. So you talk about administration efficiencies. So for you council members here, drafting ordinances, meeting summaries, public notices, AI is reducing all of that administration burden and ensures clarity and consistency in a timely manner. Budget analysis and scenario modeling. Reimagining residence services, being able to offer those 24/7 with an AI-assisted service agent. When you talk about what you can offer to the community. Multilingual translation for community engagement. So all kinds of goodness that can come off from this AI technology. You can get into the public safety aspect of it, from police and fire, and analyzing pre-incident planning, and looking at historical data to anticipate where things are going to be taking place. These are all things that your department will be capable with these AI tools and having the proper skills. And then last but not least is level three, is actually getting out to the city, making the city more resilient. Small cities actually feel the turnover and knowledge loss especially hard. And AI can help capture those things, how things are done in an agency, so knowledge doesn't walk out the door. For the smaller cities, this isn't about sophisticated analytics off the bat. It's about continuity. The citywide benefits embedded in AI and the public-facing services. They're able to develop mature agents, and then on comes the predictive analysis. But in our coursework and our assessments, we can't stress this enough, is keeping the human in the loop Every successful city that I worked with to date follows this rule. Humans stay in control. AI does not approve permits. AI does not set policy. AI does not make enforcement decisions. AI assists. And the staff decide. This model reduces risk while delivering real value. So, how do cities get stuck? Well, cities struggle with AI when they wait for a perfect plan. And in talking with people back there at the booth, I can see and I can feel the energy. Folks want to move on this, and they're looking for help. They need guidance. They want to be able to fix broken processes that have been in their government for years. And so the most successful cities, they start small, they learn quickly and adjust. Progress beats perfection every single time. And so where do you start? Well, I think these are the four categories, and we'll focus on the first two. And again, it's a little faint up there, but the first one is establish an AI policy and governance, right? So put some guardrails around it. Is it got to be a policy that's extensive for you small cities? No. I think it can actually be some very, very simple guardrails internally that allows you and allows your staff to be able to start engaging in this technology at a low risk. And simultaneously, while you're putting that policy and guardrails in place, you need to start skilling your workforce immediately in order for your staff to not only get properly trained on the risks of AI, but so that they can start bringing new ideas to the forefront and solving problems in a much quicker and faster manner. Once those two things are in place, that's when you start getting into the department level and onto the city benefits. And so I'd be more than happy to have and carry on this discussion later on today and making sure I help some of you cities get started and not getting stuck, and not staying stuck in the mud. And so my final takeaway is never travel to Oregon without a raincoat. And make sure you hike the Wakena and Multaloma Falls Loop. I was able to do that on my way out here, and it was the most beautiful thing. And I wanted to thank Oregon for allowing me to do this. But if you would like to have further discussion and how AI and how we can help you and your workforce become AI fluent, please scan this code up there. It's just going to ask for your contact information and what interests you about this presentation today. I'll be more than glad to follow up and help you get out of the gate and help some of your staff and leaders there. I'll close with this. A workforce that knows how to use AI responsibly and effectively will absolutely outperform cities that don't invest in these essential skills. Start small, keep people in charge, and build AI fluency one step at a time. Thank you.